group, for I knew that they were all uneasy about mixing with the armed workers when they themselves had been stripped of their blasters. And it would be difficult for Christy and Mildred to travel back to Salvation in the same wag as the men who had wanted to rape them. But Ryan knew that survival was about playing odds. They needed to get their blasters back, and Crow had told them that Baron Silas Hunter wanted to meet them, possibly with a proposition that would give them both their blasters and some jack. They would also get taken to a ville and out of the inhospitable desert. However hostile Salvation might be, there would be more places to hide and more places to steal food and water if necessary. At the end of the day, a few slim chances were better than none at all.
Okay, we'll follow you over.
Crow nodded and walked away, returning to the sheltered camp without a backward glance. The companions extinguished the last embers of their night's fire and gathered their clothing together.
Not sure about this. Chilling time.
Yeah, but not for us. I've got a feeling that Crow's under orders from this Baron Silas to treat us like the most precious treasure.
But why would we be that important? Not that I wish to denigrate our worth in any manner, but nonetheless, I fail to see why we have suddenly become so precious.
So do I. But if we're worth something, then we stand a better chance there than we do staying out here.
He turned to the women.
It's going to be bastard hard, but we just smile sweetly and chill the fuckers later if necessary, okay?
Christy smiled.
If you say so, lover.
Let's get this over with.
They moved off towards the camp. Crow watched them come across the sand from his position and turned to his sec men. PD, Bronson, and Coburn had their Uzis in hand and were positioned across the entrance to the shelter.
Remember what I said. Baron Silas wants them alive. So if you have to chill every last motherfucker of these workers scum, then you do it.
But there are people.
Crow fixed the sec man with a steely glare that seemed to eat through him.
If they don't get back in one piece, then you won't be man enough to call anyone your people.
Petey winced, recalling the rumors in the sec force about the fates of those who had crossed the Baron of Salvation.
Exactly.
The time the companions waited in the tent shelter for the arrival of the wag to take them back to Salvation was tense, and seemed to drag on forever. The workers muttered among themselves, avoiding the subject of the strangers, and contenting themselves merely with a few sideways glances at the companions, always aware of the cold eyes of Crow and the Uzis of the sec man who stood facing them. For their part, the companions sat in silence, all straining their ears for the first sight of the wag. It was Jack who heard it first, his sense of hearing more finely tuned than anyone else's, except possibly Crow.
Wag coming.
Ryan nodded.
Okay, people. Let's keep it triple red while we load up.
It was still a little while before the rumble of the wag on the old blacktop became audible for anyone else. It started as a distant buzz, then became a fuller, deeper roar as the empty desert became suffused with sound. The roar of the engine as it pulled into the old wag stop space in front of the cinderblock building made speech impossible, but the attention of everyone in the tent camp was drawn by the click of three Uzis, the higher frequency sound cutting across the rumble. The engine cut out, and the silent camp heard two wag doors open and three men get out to exchange small talk. One of the voices came closer, and the owner of the lazy drawl pushed his head through the gap in the sheltering material.
Hey, Crow. Y'all ready to rumble?
The man cast a curious eye over the companions.
And these are the people the Baron wants to see so bad, eh?
The answer to both is yes. Now let's go.
Crow rose to his feet and swept past the lanky driver. The workers followed, and as Ryan and his companions rose to join them, they were halted by Petey, who stopped them with a raised palm, being careful not to use his Uzi in a threatening manner.
No, Crow said as how you were to wait until everything was loaded and the others were already secured.
They sat once more, a feeling of frustration sweeping over all of them at being kept virtual prisoners. It would be easy to overpower the sec man and use his Uzi to even the odds in a surprise attack, but to what end? So they continued to sit, while outside the camp was deconstructed, and what little had not already been cleared was loaded onto the wags that had contained the construction equipment. They still sat while the tent-style shelter was taken down around them, the sheeting rolled and stored in one of the wags, the remaining stores of water and food loaded up to be returned to the ville. Finally, they were left sitting in the open glare of the sun, with everything secured for the journey back to Salvation. Petey watched carefully while the work party, having finished its final tasks, climbed into the back of the wag that had brought the drivers there, and was designed to carry them home. While the wags containing the construction equipment were rust-edged and dust-smeared, showing signs of heavy work and a low level of maintenance, the transport wag was another matter. It was like some of the wags that Ryan and JB had seen as sec wags during their days on the convoys of Trader. A low, six-wheeled wag with reinforced armored sides and blaster ports on each side, it would be a tight squeeze to take the work party and the companions together, but as a vehicle purely for an eight-man group of workers, it would be perfect. The actual bodywork of the vehicle showed little signs of wear and was kept in good condition. Although it was covered in dust from the journey out, this was a surface layer and not the ingrained dirt of the other two wags. The tires also showed a degree of tread that the other two vehicles didn't share.
Baron Silas Hunter likes to look after his workers, doesn't he?
Long time since I've seen a wag that good. These men must mean a lot to him.
Or, to be more accurate, the work they are doing means much to him. Let us hope he sees us in the same light.
With everyone else in place, Petey finally turned to the companions.
Okay, let's get ourselves loaded up.
However, as the companions rose, the sec man moved a little closer and lowered his voice.
Listen, Crow may think those guys have had enough, but I'm not so sure. I don't give a fuck what the argument is between you. I just got my job to do so's I can keep alive. But it's going to be mighty close in there and get mighty uncomfortable. They may try and chant something. I'm going to be the only sec man apart from Crow itself. See, Bronson and Coburn will ride shotgun on the other wags.
You expect trouble?
Nah. There ain't jack shit out here that can live apart from those buzzards and maybe some lucky scabbies that wander too far and don't chill themselves. But there's a lot riding on this for salvation, not just the Baron, so he don't like to take no chances.
Guess I can see the sense in that. Thanks for the warning.
Petey's face twisted into something that resembled a grimace.
Hell, I ain't helping no one but myself. That's the way salvation is.
It is the way everywhere is, but we thank you anyway.
Petey looked away.
Let's cut the shit and get loaded up now.
The companions walked to the wag, which had a rear entry. The heavily armored doors were open, and as Ryan and his people came around to mount the back step, they were faced with eight hostile faces staring at them.
This is going to be fun.
Fun was the last word Ryan would ever have used to describe the trip back to Salvation. The interior of the wag was laid out bench seating along the sides, starting at the back door and running up to where the front seats for driver and sec shotgun rider were placed. The lanky driver, named Tex, who couldn't stop talking in the lazy drawl that soon became irritating, was seated along with Crow. Petey rode in back with the work party and with the companions. The line of the benches was broken on each side by the mounted blasters that were aligned with the blaster ports. On first climbing into the back, JB had checked those visually and could see that the barrels were trapped in the ports, able to move only within the confines of these gaps, and couldn't be used to turn inward to the wag. Given the obvious attitude of their traveling companions, he was relieved. The work party was seated, four on each side of the wag at the front end. That left the benches at the rear of the wag for the companions and for Petey. It was a tight squeeze, but all eight settled themselves. No one spoke, except Tex. As the wag rolled on through the desert, eating up the blacktop, the nasal, whining drawl became a buzzing irritant that stretched already frayed nerves.
You know,
for the atmosphere in the rear of the wag was as taut as a piece of elastic stretched to breaking point, and the constant monologue from the driver was like an object that played on the elastic, twanging the stretched material until it would suddenly break. As with all men of his type, the driver was supremely unaware of the damage he was causing to his passengers' nerves as he kept driving and talking. Behind his back, and that of Crow, the work party kept up a silent campaign of hostile stares at the companions.
Stay on those dudes.
Ryan and his people did their best to ignore it, but Dean's temper was being pushed to the limit, and the one who seemed to be feeling it most was the sec man Petey, who nervously fingered the trigger of his Uzi and seemed quite ill at ease. If Crow knew what was going on, and if he was even listening to what Tex was saying, he kept his peace, his impassive and still figure seemingly oblivious to what was going on behind him. Ryan felt sure that if nothing else, the Native American could sense the tension. For the wag wasn't built to comfortably hold that many people, especially on a run in such weather conditions. The desert sun was now at its height, and although they were spared the direct glare of the glowing orange-red orb, the non-insulated metal of the wag acted as a conductor for heat magnifying it and making the interior of the vehicle a sweatbox. The only fresh air came via the breeze stirred by the open blaster ports and the small door windows at the front of the WAG. The companions had no way of knowing how long the WAG journey would be, and it seemed that with each passing minute, the temperature in the interior of the WAG rose a few degrees.